written in chalk, the echo of Arthur Stace, explores the legend of the man who became Mr. Eternity and how that word ended up emblazoned across the Sydney Harbour Bridge at the turn of the millennium. This award-winning documentary is now available to watch in the free Vision app. Just tap the Watch tab and scroll to the Written in Chalk channel. If you don't have the Vision app on your phone or tablet, download it when you search Vision Christian Media in your app store. Or click the link at vision.org.au/app. Vision Watch. Vision Watch. Another way Vision is helping you look to God daily. A biblical perspective on life, culture and current events. This is 2020 on Vision.
Well, you might have caught the news about anti-immigrant riots across towns and cities in the UK. They started with protests after three girls were killed, another eight children and two adults injured, in what police described as a ferocious knife attack during a Taylor Swift-themed dance event. And far from peaceful protests, buildings have been burned, hotels housing asylum seekers attacked, shops looted, police officers hospitalised. Well, let's get some insights from Christian social commentator David Robertson, who's back with us for his insights. Hey, David, a special welcome back to 2020.
Yeah, good to be back with you. And even though we're discussing really quite a sad subject, I still think it's important and it's good to be able to discuss it and think about the implications for us here in Australia as well.
That'll be an important dimension. It's one thing to watch news reports on your television screen. It's another to say, well, wait a minute, could this ever happen here? Why don't we just start with this for a moment? Because clearly even broaching the topic, could it happen here, might mean that you're thinking, David, is yes, some of those same things that might be simmering in the UK could be simmering here as well.
Yeah, I think there are some general trends in Western society that, they say that when America sneezes, the rest of the world catches a cold. And I think particularly in the Western world. So there are some of, I think what we're seeing play out are some broader factors other than the immediate ones that occurred. And that includes, the rise of violence, extremist groups, the question of immigration, the question of identity politics, ideas such as the perception that justice isn't the same for all, the increasing anger of those who are left behind, all these kind of things are factors which apply in Australia as well.
Now, interesting that some of the sentiments that I've picked up just from reading reports, housing asylum seekers in hotels. This might be one reason why hotels have been attacked, but public servants failing to be able to balance the budget, but seemingly, five-star accommodation for asylum seekers. Does this sort of thing play on people's perceptions of whether there's some balance in the way that governments lead?
Well, I think that's part of it. I mean, this particular incident, it's really bad in that there was a rumor going around saying that the man who had committed, or the 17-year-old who had committed this horrible atrocity was, a Muslim asylum seeker, which was not true. And people should be really, really careful before they say things like that. But equally, there are all kinds of rumors going around about how this is all far right and that's what people blame on and so on. Whereas in reality, it's not so much even the question of asylum seekers. It's the question of immigrants, of people not being able to get housing, or of the perception that the country is being overrun and so on. So if you were in London, 20 years ago, you would have found, the majority would be white and British. And now it's 37%. Who are that? More residents of London have been born out with the UK. And that's, you may think that's a good thing. Someone may think that's a good thing, but it's very, very foolish to think that that will not create tensions. And it certainly does create tensions when, in particular, in areas of northern England and some areas where you're seeing these riots, the Muslims have not integrated. They've created their own communities and people feel that they are being unfairly advantaged. Now, again, perception may be wrong, but those are the perceptions that need to be dealt with. And I'm afraid that how this has come across and how this is reported is reflective of why these riots occur in the first place.
What about the secretive nature of what we might be hearing from authorities in the UK? And as you say, rumour and misinformation, and there was obviously some of that at the beginning here, but there doesn't appear to be any clearing of the air. Can our governments be trusted to actually clear the air and tell the people the truth?
Well, no, because one of the big problems in recent societies, governments have been operating on nudge theory, and they've had this idea that all sensible people, including the big corporate media companies, will go along with them. The trouble has occurred for them when people don't. Now, one of the main factors that bothers me that may come out of this is that governments will really clamp down on free speech because they'll blame free speech on this. Now, are there people on social media who have said horrendous things and who have stirred up trouble? Indeed, they have. And in my view, they should be prosecuted, just as the rioters should be prosecuted. But you would go a long way if it wasn't for platforms like X. A lot of us wouldn't have realized that there are Muslim gangs roaming around Britain at the moment as well, rioting as well. But it seems so people feel it's unfair. They feel that there's two-tier policing. They feel that police are being dispatched to protect mosques, but not synagogues. They feel that rioters are being condemned in the strongest terms by the Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, when they're perceived to be, you know, white, far-right rioters. And they're always being called that as well. There are peaceful protesters, too, who are very concerned about immigration. But if it was Black Lives Matter protesters or anti-Israel protesters or climate change protesters, the perception is that the police go a lot easier on them. And I think that perception is actually accurate.
And with the sort of threat that it's not beyond Keir Starmer to bring in the military, backing the police presence here, that really pushes things to another limit, doesn't it?
Well, it does. But again, here's the hypocrisy. So if I said to you that there were 27 police officers injured on the streets of London in one protest, we would all be horrified and we would be demanding action. But during the Black Lives Matter protest, that's exactly what happened. There were 27 police officers in London injured by that. And Keir Starmer then took the knee. He did a public photograph saying, you know, this is all terrible. And, you know, he was violence wasn't good, but he was on the side of the protesters. So you feel that, I mean, what is sometimes not allowed, there was an army officer stabbed. There have been acts of Islamist terrorism within the UK, and yet the hard action, the really tough action, is being taken against what I would regard very often as idiots at times, but also there are far-right protesters. But the trouble is that in speaking the way that Keir Starmer speaks, he's going to drive kind of ordinary people. They're going to say, well, if you're calling me far-right, I will be far-right. You know, It's a very, very foolish thing to do. Are there far-right white supremacist groups? Yes, there are. Should those who threaten violence or commit violence be dealt with the full force of the law? Of course. But then so should the Islamists, so should other groups as well. Otherwise, you end up not just with two-tier policing, but two-tier politics, two-tier reporting, and everything else. So everything gets seen through the lens of racism and so on. And we've got this bizarre world now in where Islam is considered a race. And so to criticize Islam would be racist. And I think that one of the things that will arise out of this is that the UK government will pass a law which will in effect be a blasphemy law.
And that plays into the hands of the growth of Islam all the more, doesn't it? Because isn't that some sort of a mechanism for actually creating this identity politics and the thought that there are enclaves and then the potential for the rise of the Sharia law content? Then you've got two law systems, and I'm not even sure how that works in the UK. You might even have more insight there, but we don't have that in Australia. But that would appear to be one of the goals of Islam, is to have this recognition of a two separate types of legal systems, two separate peoples within one nation.
Yeah, that's until they take over the country, and then there's only one. But yes, I mean, there's a danger of that. Now, I want to be fair here, because I want to suggest that this is not the fault of the Muslims, because Islam is quite clear about how it works. It's the political system as well as the religious system. They're not being deceitful or anything like that. But the problem is Western liberals who think Islam is just... you know, like all religions, just exactly the same, and it's not. And they turn a blind eye to what is going on. And for some crazy reason, which I've still yet to work out why this has happened, but those who are on the left and progressive now regard Islam as a religion that they should support and defend, despite it being a religion which is opposed to homosexuality, opposed to abortion, opposed to all their values. I mean, that's the kind of crazy, messed up world that we live in. Now, I have numerous personal anecdotes that I could make about how I've seen this work out in daily life. And there are plenty other people who've seen it as well. So it doesn't surprise me that there is a backlash. It disappoints me and it saddens me enormously, the level of violence that's gone along. But it's way, way, way more complex than the very simplistic narrative that's being presented in much of the Australian media, that here are a bunch of far-right lunatics and the rest of society is against them and they've got no, there's no cause at all behind any of this. And of course, let's not forget what sparked all this off, the tragedy of those children that were killed in a stabbing. Now, I want to stress again that there is no evidence whatsoever this was anything to do with Islam or immigration. There's no evidence of that. But nonetheless, I mean, that's been a trigger thing. But I do feel for the kids who are involved, and I think of all the other tragedies that have occurred.
Is there a case here where it's very difficult now to actually have a legitimate protest on a legitimate issue without it being hijacked by extremists? Now, whether you're on the left or whether you're on the right, the extremist element here does overtake what the ordinary protest is about, doesn't it?
Yes, but the bigger danger here is, I mean, there's always been this kind of thing as well. I would say this is, in one sense, this is nothing new. But the big difference, the big danger for me is that the government are going to allow certain protests and not others. So again, I come back to this. When let me take an example here from Australia. I was horrified being in Sydney to watch the anti-Israel protesters as the Sydney Opera House was lit up with the Israeli flag, the protests that occurred and the chants of death to the Jews and numerous other things that were going on. Police did nothing, nobody's arrested, nothing happens. And then the bishop, the Coptic bishop is stabbed, the Orthodox bishop is stabbed in West Sydney, and people, some people rioted and lots of people were arrested. Now, why? You know, that's really a concern that people have. I mean, I've just seen video of a senior police officer, a chief constable in the United Kingdom, beginning a press conference with Assalamu alaikum, an Islamic greeting, and then promising to protect Muslims. There is not a chance that a police officer in the United Kingdom would begin a conference of Happy Easter, or, you know, may God be with you, or anything like that. There's not a chance that would happen. So it does seem as though Muslims are becoming a particularly protected group.
A protected group in the UK and a protected group potentially here in Australia too. It comes and begs this question, though. Where's the Christian church in all of this? Are the leaders speaking out enough? Are leaders of our denominations, is their message filtering down to the pews? What are your thoughts here about what's happening in church life in Australia around the developments we're seeing around the world?
Okay, well, I think in the UK and in Australia, I think this is reflected. But I think there are two dangers that church leaders fall into. the vast majority will fall into this danger of saying, we're going to condemn all, you know, far-right extremists, we welcome immigrants, you know, we are united and so on. And all these are really well-meaning sentiments, but they lack nuance in seeing the deeper issues that are involved, and they tend to join in the what I would call the condemnation by the elites. On the other hand, there are some Christians who kind of jump on the kind of political bandwagon on the right wing, if you want to put it that way, and, you know, see everything through the lens of a cultural Christianity. And again, there's, just as with the previous group, there are things that are not wrong with that, but I think it goes too far. I think where we come from, where we need to be speaking into all of this is that we need to be, yes, stressing the oneness of God's image. We also need to stress the sinfulness of humanity and the need for Jesus Christ. But we also need to give a prophetic word, if you like, to the nations, to the rulers of this world. And we need to speak truth. I mean, I'm sorry, I do not want Australia to become either an Islamic nation, I don't think it will, but a nation where multiculturalism means that there are parts of Australia where there are in effect two separate laws ongoing. And we need to be really, really aware of that. My belief is that Australia was founded on Christian values. And if you're going to take away the Christian values, what are you going to replace them with? And at the moment, the options seem to be communism or a kind of green social progressivism or some form of Islamic theology. And that may seem ridiculous, but we're already seeing implications of how that's being played out in Europe. This is a battle that is going on in Europe and in the UK. It's not really in America, although it's beginning to come there. And my fear is that it will take part in Australia. There are hints of it already in Australia.
What about within our family units, within our local churches, bringing it right down to the grassroots? Is there a response here for people who, you know, sitting around the dinner table and you've got teenagers and you're trying to make sense of the world for them? Where do you think we go with communicating those things in our local communities?
Well, I think, first of all, we seek to speak to people from all different backgrounds. I think we are explicitly as well as implicitly opposed to racism. I think we love our Muslim neighbors and we seek to communicate the gospel to them. But I also, and we love our Jewish neighbors and others as well, atheists, whatever. But we must also be aware not to fall into the narratives of this world, because what I've noticed happening even in the Australian press is you're always asked to pick one side, you know, and I would encourage people to question. Extremely thankful. I know there might be a crackdown, but the reason I'm thankful for him is he does allow different viewpoints and you learn so much. I mean, where people are in error and where people are wrong, let that come out into the open and then you can challenge it. Otherwise, you drive it underground. And I think the narrative that we've been fed by so much of the media and by so many of our politicians actually ends up causing a great deal of harm, because it breeds a simmering resentment, which one day will come out violence in the UK. This has been more than a decade, more than what decades at least, building up, and Keir Starmer is not going to be able to put the lid back on this by jailing a few thousand people.
Well, David Robertson, I know you're working on an article right now, and listeners might be very interested to read some deeper insights into what's going on in the UK and how that relates to what might be developing also, simmering along, perhaps just under the surface here in Australia. Let me point listeners to connect with David Robertson. David's a Christian social commentator. TheWeFlee.com, TheWeFlee.com. You might have detected that Scottish accent. TheWeFlee.com. And you might want to also check out David's books. He's got a number of books that he's written. His latest book is called Seek. David Robertson, thank you so much for taking some time to share these thoughts with listeners today on 2020.
Yeah, well, it's good to be with you. May God bless you and all the listeners, and may he bring peace to Australia, to the UK, and through Christ.
Thanks for taking time to listen to this audio on demand from Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, go to vision.org.au.